Our show's name pays tribute to the Boer Trekkers of South Africa, who in 1838 soundly defeated 30,000 Zulus on the bank of the Nkomo River, thereafter called Blood River, from the water turning red with the blood of the slain. Miraculously, no Boer Trekker died and only three were wounded. Now, your friend, Eddie Miller, will be your ambassador for tonight's show.
Oh, dear Blood River Radio family, thank you so much for hanging on. That was a riveting interview. It's depressing, and it makes me angry how white people here, especially white men here in the United States, that we have not only do we not have any equal protection under the law, not only do we not have access to a fair trial, and we don't even have courtrooms anymore. And this case you heard in the first hour, we just got through talking about, in case you're just now tuning in, with Greg and Travis McMichael, the father and son duo, and Brian Williams, that were wrongly convicted of a shotgun death of a serial felon, black felon, a feral animal. That will illustrate with broad, bright colors, like a Roman candle in a dark coal mine, what I've said. If you think you have any law and order, any justice in this country, and you're a white man, you are sadly mistaken. And what happened to those people down there could easily happen to any one of us. If you try to defend yourself against an assault against any black person, you're just cold meat. But people, you need to think about that. But anyway, we're shifting gears. We're in the second hour here, and we're talking about something that's near and dear to our heart. As we've been talking about some time. Probably, it's probably going to be now about the 1st of May, because everybody and his mama knows I have to run for my mental and physical health. So I've had to, April the 23rd, I'll be running the Nashville St. Jude Marathon. After I come back from that, I'm going down to Ole Miss, God willing. I'm going to try to see if we can broadcast the show down there. If they won't let us broadcast it on campus, we'll try to find some place, a private business will let us do it. We'll do something, but also we're handing out about 200. Dr. Hill sent me a box of the Free Magnolia newspapers put out by the League of the South, and we're also going to be handing out some brochures. We're also handing out brochures about the history of the University of Mississippi and how relevant it is to Lincoln's war against the South. These young airheads, cucks down there, they need to know the history of that university. And that's why we have one reason this show is going to mesh perfectly with our trip to Ole Miss in about 5 or 6 weeks, because we have a fellow in here. His name is Walter Patton, and he's an expert on this this University of Mississippi. And we also have Gene, the bitter Ender Andrews, though. And everybody knows, everybody in the Western Hemisphere listens to this show knows Gene. We have two Confederate history experts on here. So my job, I'm just going to bring them out of the break tonight. And I'll start off by asking Mr. Walter to introduce himself briefly and give me a quick bow. How are you doing tonight, Walter?
Hey, Eddie, how are you? It's great to be here.
Great to have you here, son. I see your friends up there with the Paul Lawrence, aren't you, up there in South Carolina?
Yes.
That's great. He's a really good guy. He certainly is. He's helped me on several occasions. He really has. We also have, see if y'all recognize this voice here coming from Nashburg. Nashburg voice. By the way, the Nashville was promoted to a burg, because since I started running marathons up there, I said, a ville is just not good enough. It's got to be a burg. So go ahead. Come in, voice from Nashburg.
All right. Thank you, Eddie. And want to say hello to Walter and glad to be on the show with him. That's certainly an honor to be with somebody that's an expert on the University of Mississippi and Oxford and all that has transpired down there. And, you know, you're almost right. It was Nashboro at one time. It was Fort Nashboro when it was first settled. And then we were in a war with England, and they didn't want to have Borough since that was an English name, so they changed it to Nashville, which was a French name, and the French were helping us out in the Revolution. So, yeah, it was Nashboro at one time. So, but that was before my day. I'm old. I'm not that old.
Well, I tell you what, I got close. I guess even a blind hog finds acorn every now and then, they say. So I got close there. Well, anyway, Gene, I tell you what, I guess we'll just lead off. I know the bitter ender is the experts on the Confederate history. By the way, next week is Confederate History Week at the Political Cesspool, if y'all want to tune into that. But also, listen, we're going to let Walter, since Ole Miss, we only live at the Crow Flies, probably about a, it used to be 90 miles. I'm about 125 miles from the Ole Miss campus, and we'll be going down there. I've always loved Ole Miss when they had that Confederate battle flag down there. But Walter, lead us off tonight, son. Tell us what you know about the University of Mississippi. You can tell us a little bit about yourself if you want to our audience, how you got into this situation of history. But tell us what you know about the University of Mississippi and their history and how they are entwined their history, their culture is inseparable from Lincoln's War Against the South. So take it away, Walter.
Well, my name is Walter. I am from South Carolina. I love the history of what we often refer to as the Civil War today, even though it really wasn't much of a civil war, as the Confederacy was not vying for control over the United States government, but was trying to create its own government. I've always been a historian. My whole life I've been a historian, I would say, since I was probably 2 years old, and I've just been fascinated with it ever since the seventh grade, about the time when Nikki Haley took our flag down here in South Carolina on her Capitol ground. But the University of Mississippi is really interesting in the sense that they formed, or students from the university formed a company in February of 1861, made up entirely of members of the student body. And that company would go on to serve four very hard years, from the First Battle of Manassas to just before the surrender in 1865, and suffered terribly, but stood gallantly in many, many hard fought battles.
You know what? That's one of the key things, facts I want to nail our little mushhead students down there at the University of Mississippi. Well, now we're going to I'm going to shut up and let the bitter ender come in and kind of prime the pump. So go ahead, bitter ender.
Yeah, that unit was known as the University Grays, and the university was closed for 4 years there because all of the students and all the faculty members left to join the Confederate Army. And the University Grays became Company A of the 11th Mississippi Infantry. And they took casualties throughout the war. And by the end, they had 100% casualties. They were all either killed, wounded, and dismissed from the service for war wounds. And so it no longer existed at the end of the war. And that's why the university, when it came back and opened after the war, and when, you know, in the late 1800s, all the universities started sponsoring athletic teams, and they wanted to have some type of nickname for their team. They chose the name Rebels, because what better title could you pick? And their colors were red, white, and blue, from the red, white, and blue of the Confederate battle flag. And they used that symbol for the next 100 years or so, until it became politically incorrect and they had to go out, like all schools had to do, starting in the 60s and 70s, they had to go out and recruit these paid thugs to represent them on the athletic court or athletic field or on the track. And they were offended by our Southern history. And so the alumni and the student body, they would sell their soul to have a winning team. And so many of our universities have cut out all of our Confederate heritage and history that has been an integral part of all of our universities in the South. For instance, I know they're a big rival of Ole Miss, but the LSU Tigers came from the Confederate Army also. It was Robert Wheat's Louisiana Tigers that served under Stonewall Jackson in the Valley. And then when he joined the Army of Northern Virginia, they were incorporated into the Army of Northern Virginia. So that's where the Louisiana Tigers came from. And here in Middle Tennessee, we had Middle Tennessee State, we still have it, Middle Tennessee State University Raiders. And they were named for Forrest Raid on Murfreesboro in 1862 that actually saved the town of Murfreesboro from being burned down. And they used to have a mounted rider on a horse that would ride around the field with a Confederate flag because they were the Raiders. But, of course, they've gotten rid of that and trying to destroy everything associated with anything Confederate in the university campus at MTSU, and actually in the town of Murfreesboro as well. It's really sad how we've turned our back on our history, or had it turned against us, and all to appease a group of people that have no respect for us, no respect for our history, and yet we're supposed to fall down and genuflect and worship their history and their culture, but none of ours.
Amen. Amen. That's certainly true. I would completely agree with that. And it's funny, you know, looking back on it and the history of the war, Forrest, Nathan Bedford Forrest, was perhaps the greatest terror that the Union Army experienced, at least in the Western theater, by any stretch of the imagination, excluding the guerrilla forces that associated themselves with the South. And Forrest, as much of a terror as he was to the Union Army, had come from nothing, started the war as a private, used his personal fortune to outfit a regiment of cavalry for service in the Confederate Army. And Forrest, interestingly enough, probably did more in the state of Tennessee, at least to heal the wounds caused by the war, and tried to encourage people to live civilly and in peace. But today, Forrest is probably one of the most hated of all of the Confederacy's heroes because of his association, his brief association with the Ku Klux Klan following the war.
Well, that is true. It doesn't matter. You know, if he'd been associated with the Brownie Scouts, they would still hate him because he's a Southerner, right, and he was a Confederate. So,
sure. Guys, we have to go to our first break, and we'll get right back. It just so happens Gene has a unique history he can tell you about General Forrest, and we'll get to that as soon as we come back this break. Hold on, people. Be right back.
The spirit of the American West is alive and well in Range Magazine, the award-winning quarterly devoted to the issues of the American West. Each issue contains informative articles, breathtaking imagery, as well as the culture of cowboy spirit today, and gift ideas, like this year's Buckaroo calendar. Order online from rangemagazine.com. Loving Liberty Network salutes the spirit of the American West at rangemagazine.com.
Okay, listen up, people. I'm beating the bushes for a few good men. I don't want you boys the alt-right. I want the hardcore of the hard-right. And I need you front and center, boots on the ground, at a minute's notice, in the streets, and I need your money. You know the problem that the whites of the world face. It's the all-too-real threat of global extermination. And you know what's going on in South Africa and Western Europe. And unless you're semi-comatose, you've already seen the first stages of white genocide unfolding in our country. Our culture is under constant full-scale attack by our enemy. The enemy never sleeps. They spend day and night wrecking the monuments and the graves of our beloved kin. They attack us physically everywhere we go. They've already taken the linen and our stone. Now they're coming after our flesh. And if you're not too squeamish, if you want to be part of the number one white advocacy group and the number one white civil defense group in the United States, then contact Eddie Bombardier Miller at BloodRiverRadio.com. And please, please donate. And God knows you need us as much as we need you. Thank you.
This is a battle between truth and deceit, a battle between forces that would enslave this country in darkness and between a media that wants to present you with the truth.
We are being censored. America's news outlets no longer provide the truth. 90% of news outlets in the United States are controlled by 6 corporations. The mission of the Epoch Times is to chase the truth, to ground all statements in fact.
TheEpochTimes.com.
Go ahead, make my day.
Hello, dear Blood River Radio family. This has been one heck of a show. This is a lot better show. The second hour is not, it's not dreary like the first hour was, but we have two great people on. We have everybody's mama knows Gene Andrews, my dear brother. And he is without Gene, there would be no Blood River Radio. He's something else. And we have a Walter Patton on, a younger fellow tonight who's from South Carolina. You don't get no more South than that. And he mentioned, I think the governor who took the flag down, there was another traitor that come down from up north. His name was Lou Holtz. I think he was the coach at the University of South Carolina for a while. And he marched with those, Gene called them, you know, these thugs. I called him. I borrowed a term from Gene, these feral animals. He walked with them, to have their flag taken down off the, I think, off the state capitol. But what a traitor, man. What a stinking race traitor. Lou Holtz. I better shut about him before I get us kicked off the air. But anyway, Gene, we were talking about during the break about the Forest Home and how raising money for the Forest Home to keep it going. Gene, if you will, before we get back to the Ole Miss, and tell the audience about what you do at the Forest Home, how much money it takes. And I know the Sons of Confederate Veterans have a museum up there. I think it's, I want to say Columbia, Tennessee. I want to say Fly because That's I have correct. A really good friend. So go ahead, Gene, take over there. Tell the people about that.
Well, back in 1997, the Sons of Confederate Veterans acquired this two-story log cabin that was a boyhood home of Confederate General Nathan Bedford Forrest. He lived there from the time he was 9 until he was 12, and then his father moved the family down to northern Mississippi, and his father died when Bedford was 16 years old. So at 16, he was the oldest male in a family of a widowed mother and 5 other children, and literally living on the frontier, panthers and bears sat in the woods. And he worked hard, went into business with his uncle, and became a very successful businessman. And at the outbreak of the War for Southern Independence, he was worth well over $1.5 million, which would be about $40 to $45 million today. And somebody with that much money and that much political clout, he was an alderman in Memphis, would expect to be given a high rank or a high political office. He walked into a recruiting office in Memphis and enlisted as a private. And he rose from the rank of private to lieutenant general, one of only two people in American military history that have done that. The other was General Lewis B. Puller, in the Marine Corps, Chesty Puller. And so his tactics are studied worldwide today for a mobile lightning type of warfare that he initiated. And he wrote several times to President Davis and outlined different programs and that he had executed that they could expand in the Western theater of war and stop Grant and stop Sherman and stop Rosecrans. And the Confederate government ignored him, and we wound up losing the war. And so we have to put up with Sleepy Joe for president and all the other nonsense that we get out of the enemy's country, because we were forced at gunpoint to join their country. So, yes, Forrest was a great military leader. And like Walter mentioned before the break, he actually tried to reconcile the differences between the still enemy factions that were occupying our country after the war. See, the South was occupied for 12 years after the war. The war is only 4 years, but occupation in some places is even worse than the war for 12 years. And even reconcile the differences between the white and black races in the South. And if he had been listened to, probably race relations would be a lot better than they are today. But, you know, he was on the losing side. So, you know, the winners always write the history books and force their propaganda on us. But Walter, could you give us a little bit of information about the town of Oxford and what all went on there and the founding of the university and that sort of thing?
Well, I don't know too much about the histories or the history of the university or the town, but the town was a recruiting center and thousands of volunteers from Oxford had joined the Confederate Army, as well as those men who were the first to go and at the beginning of the war in February of 1861. But Mississippi as a whole provided an enormous amount of resources and men to the South and the Confederacy. And it's sort of an oft-repeated fact. A quarter of the state's budget in 1866 went towards prosthetic limbs for soldiers who had been wounded and mangled during the war, which is pretty amazing to think a quarter of a state's budget could go to repairing the broken bodies of her sons that she had sent to the war for four horrible years.
Well, that is true. And what a lot of people don't realize either, the economic impact that the war had on the South. Prior to the war, the state of Mississippi had a higher per capita income for individuals in that state than New York State. And in fact, people in the South were living much better off than they were in the North. And that's one reason why Lincoln could not allow the Southern states to leave, because that would have taken the federal budget with them, because the axis of evil empire was making its money off of tariffs and taxes on agricultural products. And may not have the exact numbers, but I've read that the federal budget in 1860 was about $103 million. And we laugh at that. They blow that off just in lunchtime at lunchtime in Washington today.
Right.
But that was a lot of money back then. And out of that 103, the southern states were paying about $82 million out of that. And I'm sure Mississippi was paying a large portion of that because of the cotton and the agricultural products that they were raising there. So Lincoln couldn't allow the states to leave. And he had to manufacture some phony cause, a false flag, to get an excuse to declare war against the South and invade the South. Now, one thing I did do some research on Oxford a little bit. During the war, it was occupied by Grant, Sherman, and A.J. Smith. And A.J. Smith, one of the Yankee generals, actually burned the town in retaliation for Forrest defeating him in another battle in Mississippi. It had nothing to do with Oxford. But this is just fairly typical of the cowardly attitude of the Yankee army. They couldn't defeat the Confederate military, so they took it out on the civilian population or towns, which had no military bearing or value on the war and was totally defenseless. So they would just go in and burn the homes, loot the buildings, loot the homes, loot the whatever they wanted to take from the businesses, and then burn it down. Of course, you know, Sherman burned Jackson, Mississippi twice. They burned it right. once, and it didn't do a good enough job, so he went back and had his war criminals burn it again. And then they laughed about it and called it Chimney Town, because those were the only things that were left were stone or brick chimneys, because all the wooden buildings had been burned. So this is the good old U.S. of A. Army and what they do to anybody that comes up against them, and they just try to destroy the entire civilization, be it Southerners, be it Apache, you know, Comanche, Sioux, whoever. If you stand up to the U.S. military, they'll not only defeat your military units, but they will just try to destroy your entire civilization as well.
That's absolutely true. That's absolutely true. I think one of my favorite photographs of the war, and one that I think is most striking, was taken from the state house steps of the South Carolina State House. And it looked down the main corridor of Columbia, and there was nothing but wrecked wagons and chimneys and just ruins and piles of bricks. And the Yankees had captured Columbia, and the Confederates were certainly not coming back, and Sherman knew that, but it was burned regardless on February the 17th of 1865, and thousands of people were displaced from their homes. You read about it, Union soldiers and Confederate soldiers alike seeing thousands and thousands of old men and women and small children, women with their children, fleeing from their homes and their towns. And if they hadn't lost enough before, and their husbands, fathers, and sons, well, they certainly, the Federals, the Yankees, had more to take.
Well, they did. And the destruction of Columbia is one of the worst records in United States military history. It had no military value at all, except mm-hmm. that it was in the South, and it was in South Carolina, the first to secede. And so they wanted vengeance and revenge, and they burned the civilian homes and buildings that had, like I said, had no military value at all. And even when they called out the fire department to try to put the fires out, the Yankee soldiers would take their bayonets and swords and stab holes in the fire hoses so the fire department couldn't put the fires out. And that's another credit to our great United States military and what they did in Columbia. But like I said, that's just fairly typical of what they did. It's interesting. They've shown all these pictures about the Russian air attacks and rocket attacks on civilians, apartment buildings, and the theater, and even churches and hospitals in Ukraine. But I would dare any of those TV stations, even Fox, to show the pictures of Columbia and Richmond, Charleston, what happened to them during the war by the U.S. military.
Excellent point, Gene. Y'all, with that point, that comment made, we have to go to our second break. And after this break, we'll go right back. This is I'm really enjoying this. People, I hope you're enjoying this interview as much as I am. Be right back.
Exposing corruption. Informing citizens, pursuing liberty. You're listening to Liberty News Radio. USA Radio News with Kenneth Burns.
The president from Poland trying to rally global support for Ukraine.
We stand with you. Period.
In a speech that lasted about a half hour, the president blasted his Russian counterpart, Vladimir Putin. He says the Kremlin's invasion of Ukraine caused some other things to happen that Putin did not expect.
Rather than breaking Ukrainian resolve, Russia's brutal tactics have strengthened the resolve. Rather than driving NATO apart, the West is now stronger and more united than it has ever been.
Russia not conquering Ukraine as swiftly as Putin expected. It's signaling a change in strategy, but the Biden administration says they are going to watch what the Kremlin does as opposed to what they say. Hungarian Prime Minister Viktor Orban seeking his country's neutrality in the war in Ukraine, causing frustration and outrage instead, including from Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky. This is USA Radio News.
Hi, this is Wayne Allyn-Root. It's official. Inflation is at its highest level since the 1980s, according to the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics. What most people don't know is that it's actually much worse. Inflation may be higher now than the 1980s, since the new measurements exclude food and energy. Gas prices up 58%, energy up 33%. What can you do about it? Protect yourself and your family. Only gold, silver, and other hard assets give you true protection. My friends at Tangible Investments guarantee the absolute lowest prices on precious metals. Check them out at TII1.com or call 800-300-8441. Tangible Investments has 40 years of experience and billions, that's with a B, billions in transactions. Call 800-300-8441 if you want help with gold, silver, platinum. They guarantee you the best prices plus excellent service. Call Tangible Investments now, 800-300-8441 or visit TII1.com. They also provide free verbal appraisals.
The U.S. called for tougher sanctions on North Korea after Pyongyang test-fired its biggest intercontinental ballistic missile to date. Kim Jong-un vowed to expand his country's, quote, nuclear war deterrent while preparing for what it called a long-standing confrontation with the United States. At a U.N. Security Council meeting Friday, Ambassador Linda Thomas-Greenfield said the U.S. would propose a resolution to update and strengthen sanctions. Members of Canada's indigenous population and the Vatican are set to meet next week. The Assembly of First Nations expecting a public apology from the Vatican after last year's discovery in British Columbia of about 200 unmarked and previously undocumented graves of children at what was Canada's largest indigenous residential school. More than 150,000 indigenous children were forced to attend government-funded Christian schools from the 19th century through the 1970s. Chinese authorities say none of the 132 people aboard a China Eastern flight that crashed last week survived. You're listening to USA Radio News.
A Venus 44 Magnum, the most powerful handgun in the world, and would blow your head clean off. You've got to ask yourself one question. Do I feel lucky? Well, do you, punk?
Oh, dear Blood River Radio family, we're right back. Before I forget, I got to ask Gene, how can people contribute to help the forest home? I know, because, man, you spend untold hours up there, and to help with the maintenance of that place, with maybe the improvement of it. And plus, I think there's going to be something in June. Tell us a little bit more about that, how they can contribute, Gene, to help the forest home.
Sorry, Eddie, we got kind of sidetracked in the previous segment.
I'll always do.
All right. The 18th of June, we have our 20th annual Forest Homecoming and Southern Heritage Festival there on the grounds of the Forest Home. And it goes from about 9 till 4 in the afternoon. That's Saturday, the 18th of June. We always have it the third Saturday in June. And we have historical speakers and music. And we have reenactors firing cannons and giving demonstrations of cavalry and infantry. We have a lot of vendors there that set up selling books, flags, all sorts of Confederate items there. It's really like a big homecoming event on the grounds there. And it's a Southern event, so we have lots of food and things to drink. So don't worry about that. So that's one of our major fundraising efforts for the year. And if anybody would like information, the local camp there in Chapel Hill and Ronnie Headley have set up a Facebook site for Forest Boyhood Home, get all kind of information about events that are going on there. And that's a location that you can go to or the address of their camp in Chapel Hill if you would like to send a donation and make sure that that donation goes to the Forest Boyhood Home. So we invite people to go online and check that out, or you know, any of those websites that they have with the Forest Boyhood Home that can give you that information. And we invite everybody to come out there in June. It's always a good time. We were talking, one more thing I wanted to point out, and talking about Ole Miss, back when they banned the flag. And, you know, when I was in high school and Ole Miss came to Nashville to play Vanderbilt, that whole visitor section was just solid red with Confederate flags. And the cheerleaders would come by before the game and throw these bundles of flags up into the stands for the students and the Ole Miss fans. And, I mean, it was really cool. And I've talked to some people that went to Ole Miss down there in the early 60s, and they said, yeah, the whole side of the stadium where the students were was just solid red with all those flags. And, of course, then Ole Miss, like all these other communist indoctrination centers, got real politically correct. So they banned the flag from being brought into the stands because the sticks might – poke somebody in the eye. That was their lame excuse. They didn't want to come out and say they were banning the flag, but they said the sticks might poke somebody in the eye. So a couple of characters and I, one of them being Wild Bill Rowland and Ronnie Mangrum, and I went down there to an Ole Miss football game, and we found a whole stack of the liberal communist student newspapers and took one of the newspapers, rolled it up in a real tight roll, and taped a flag on it. And we went up to a policeman at the gate and said, now, this is not a wooden stick. Can we come in with the flag? He said, boys, it looks okay to me. Go right ahead. So we took it right in with us. And the students were going nuts that we got a flag in there. And they went running around getting these newspapers and pulling the flags out of their shirt pocket or wherever they were hiding their flags and sticking them on these newspaper flagpoles that weren't going to poke somebody in the eye. Well, now they've convinced everybody, you know, they just can't do that anymore. It doesn't matter what kind of a standard they have flying the flag. They don't want them down there. And like I said, it's so sad of all the things that changed. I went to University of Georgia, something I'm not really proud of from the way they've gone downhill. But before a Georgia football game, they play the national anthem. Everybody kind of stand the Yankee national anthem. And everybody kind of stand and sort of look down to feet. Da-da-da-da-da-da. And then on the last note, they would go into that really upbeat, loud, patriotic version of Dixie. And then here come the Georgia football team out on the field and about five or six of the cheerleaders out in front carrying big 3x5 Confederate battle flags that run out to the 50-yard line and turn and over to the Georgia sideline. So they that's the way they started every game in Athens. And then in 1972, they had an article in the Nashville Pravda, our communist newspaper, the Tennessean, and they were so proud to announce that Georgia had decided they weren't going to play Dixie anymore because it might offend somebody. Well, it certainly offended me. I've never given them a dime. All the, you know, the letters they send out to alumni for begging for money, I send it back to them with a nasty note. And it took them about 3 years to finally realize that this guy wasn't going to send them any money, so they took me off the list. So I could care less what happens to them. If the Georgia Bullfrogs are playing the Putin national team or something like that, I'll pull for the Russians. I'm not going to pull for them. They stabbed us in the back, so the heck with them. But unfortunately, that's happened to all of our universities. So I don't know what you can do about that.
You know, it's a good thing they put a stop to you guys using those newspapers for your battle flags, because you could have cut somebody with that paper.
Could have gotten a paper cut. You know, we were
That's
just so careless.
Liability. You wouldn't want that.
I hadn't even thought of that. A paper cut. Oh my gosh, that would have been terrible. Well, I know, you know, all of these politicians stab us in the back. Tricky Nikki Haley said that the battle flag was not going to be an issue once they got it off the rotunda of the Capitol there and moved it down to the Soldiers Monument. And then when that crazy kid shot up all those people in that church, the news media dug and dug and dug and dug until they finally found a picture of him in high school with a Confederate flag And Tricky Nicky came out and boo-hooed and sobbed and just went all to pieces and had the flag taken down from the Soldier Monument. So it shows you that a politician's word is worth absolutely nothing. What they say they're going to do and what they actually do are two different things.
You know, as an aside, I remember when I was a kid, and later on, you know, my I have one daughter. She'll be 54. Her birthday is how old I am. And when she was a kid, she was a rabid Ole Miss fan. She had friends that that loved Ole Miss. She had one friend who had a brother who was quite a bit older than they were, and he played football at Ole Miss. And we would we were still allowed to take our Confederate battle flags in there. And, Gene, I remember, just like you said, up until the time I worked at St. Francis Hospital, I guess in the early 80s, you know, they played hell. They couldn't get those students to stop bringing those rebel flags in, but it would just be solid. I know in the Commercial Appeal, that's the Memphis Rag, their Sunday morning paper when it showed the Ole Miss Memphis State game, whatever, it'd just be an ocean of Confederate flags. But they finally, I think, won out. You probably couldn't even find a Confederate flag in there. But, you know, anyway, back to you, Mr. Walter. Chime and tell us a little bit more about Ole Miss if you have any other information about that. Especially some stuff I can use when I go down there. I'm going down there, and I want to try to educate some of these young airheads down here to their actual heritage. Before I go back to you again, Walter is so kind as to send me some information I can download. I think it's about two pages on the Gene mentioned it on the Company A, the Mississippi Infantry, and it tells their history. It's about two pages. I'm going to try to copy some of those off. That's some of the literature I'd like to hand out while we're down there. How much time I'll have to have, I'll probably have to go from point to point to point. But I'm going to do the best I can. But anyway, go ahead, Walter.
If I were in your shoes, I would most certainly emphasize the Company A's service at Gettysburg. But Company A left, you know, Company's 100 men, if any of your listeners don't know. I'm sure y'all know, of course. But they left in February of 1861 with 100 men. And they were only one of two companies in the 11th that were engaged at the first Battle of Manassas, called Bull Run by the Yankees. But I like Manassas a little better. I think we won both battles. We get to decide what it's called. They were led by a lieutenant at Gettysburg and were not engaged the first day because there were several regiments out of Lee's army that were detailed to guard wagons. But they would certainly not be excluded from any of the fighting that was to come. But their brigade, Joseph Davis's brigade, who was a nephew of Jefferson Davis, they were terribly bloodied on the first day of fighting when Henry Heath's division came into Gettysburg and encountered the Army of the Potomac on July 1st, 1863. But on that third day, portions of three Confederate divisions were put into line. It was about 12,500 to 15,000 men. And they commenced their attack, and the 11th Mississippi ended up being along the line in front of the Bryan Barn and attacked near the Bryan Barn, and only portions of the regiment made it to the stone wall. But I have their statistics from the battle. The 11th Mississippi brought 393 men to bear on the Union line that day, suffered 110 killed, 193 wounded and captured, 37 men captured unwounded, leaving 53 men standing. And Company A, the University Grade, suffered 100% casualties, which is a casualty rate that makes them extremely unique for any unit throughout the entirety of the war. Every single man was killed or wounded. The lieutenant leading the company, he was a student from the University of Mississippi. Their original captain was named William B. Lowry.
Well, forget back. We have to go on the break. Back to that as soon as we get back. As soon as we come back, I want you to continue that.
We at Freedom Factor have a passion for our shared American heritage and want to help restore some of that American pride by emphasizing the documents that made us Americans. Our goal is to put pocket constitutions into the hands of every American and in every school. This effort requires your help. Order your pocket constitutions and browse our website at freedomfactor.org to learn how you can help spread the message of freedom. Read it, know it, share it. Freedomfactor.org.
Blood River Radio is the only news media in the United States whose sole purpose of being is to fight against the ever-rising tide of global white genocide, both soft and hard genocide, whether it is in the form of ethnic cleansing via the current massive invasion of non-white, non-Christian hordes that are overwhelming the once all-white nations of Western Europe, the United Kingdom, Canada, Australia, New Zealand, and the United States, or via the hard genocide in South Africa, where the rape, murder, and torture of whites is an ongoing daily occurrence. Though we are a Christian brotherhood, we will cooperate with other groups in our operations if it will shorten our people's casualty list. We further pledge to you to leave the radio studio at every opportunity and take it to our churches, to our universities, and most importantly, we promise to occupy the streets. However, none of our mission can succeed without funding. Please help us all that you can and donate to our cause by going to www.bloodriverradio.com.
Have you ever had great honey? No, I mean really good, all-natural, raw honey. Well, now you can, thanks to localhoneyman.com. We can ship out our locally made honey all across the U.S. So don't worry, you won't miss out. Plus, Local Honeyman has so many different flavors, like Utah Wildflower, High Desert Delight, Happy Valley, and Blackberry, just to name a few. So purchase your delicious raw honey today at localhoneyman.com.
Oh, dear Blood River Radio family, this show's getting to be kind of emotional, too. It ties together, really, with our flagship issue, our guiding issue in Blood River Radio is to fight against global white genocide. That's been from day one. It'll be there until I die, as long as I have anything to do with the show. And, you know, we talked about the first hour, which is, we told you several times, about three totally innocent white men being railroaded into a gulag. It's a they call it a courtroom. It's like a stinking. It'd make us, you know what, a New Orleans whorehouse would look clean compared to these what they call courts nowadays. And if you now, and fast forwarding for the first hour, you know what happened there in the first hour with these the three people of Georgia being convicted. Fasting and going over to the second hour, look how our people. You've hearing Gene and Walter. We're going to go right back to Walter. He's going to tell you how much rivers of blood, gallons of blood, that good Southern, God-fearing Christian, not all of them maybe, but white boys. The South has always been known as the Bible Belt. We were noted for being a hardcore Christian in the South. Thousands from the South and hundreds from the University of Mississippi, the 11th Mississippi Infantry, just been slaughtered, man. Their blood. You know, what I'm going to tell these kids when I go down to Ole Miss, this university is built on a river of blood. You know, you had your ancestors, they suffered years barefooted in the blistering, you know, bitter cold, going bitter heat, nothing to drink, mosquitoes, ticks, probably leeches in places, nothing, you know, malnutrition is, I mean, just no medicine, and they never quit. They fought to the very end. They bled and bled and bled, and you're going to let a bunch of stinking Yankees tell you you can't fly that flag. But you know what? I'm going to tell them people, I double damn dog dare them to stand up to these people down there at the University of Mississippi. These cutthroats that are running that show down there at Ole Miss, and tell them to stick it where the sun don't shine. We're gonna have our culture. We're gonna fly our flags. And I'm getting too carried away there, Walter. So I'm gonna go right back to you, fella, and finish telling us finish up where you're talking about, especially about the 11th Mississippi, the casualties they had, and also Gene. And I think you too brought up a very emotional point about the stained glass window down there in a chapel. So if you go ahead, take off, Walter.
Sure. Well, thank you again. So they went into battle and for with 400 men, which was pretty strong for Lee's army at that time. One of Lee's biggest regiments was 600 men, and 1,000 men would be a full size regiment, which goes to show you how they had been whittled away over the years. The 11th Mississippi, they came back with only 53 men out of nearly 400. And that goes to show you those men who went into Pickett's charge on July the 3rd, 1863, that afternoon, they were all veteran soldiers. These men at the University of Mississippi, they had been at Sharpsburg. They had been at Fredericksburg. They'd been at Chancellorsville. They had known what was coming to them. They had seen war. And when they went to that charge, they knew that many of them, indeed most of them, would not come back. And that proved true. But nonetheless, they went into that sheet of flame and bursting artillery shells. When the Federal musketry opened up on the Confederate attack, the artillery had been opening holes in the Confederate line, cutting gaps in the Confederate line as the soldiers came on, and they said that the ranks would just be filled as if they were on parade and a man had fallen out of step. It was amazing. It was Union officers described it as one of the most beautiful things they had ever seen. And it was a shame to wreck such a beautiful display of military pageantry on the march. But those men died at every step coming up to Cemetery Ridge, where they attacked the Union Second Corps. And they suffered terribly. And you were right. The University of Mississippi runs under a river of blood. Their lieutenant who led them into battle that day, who was a student of the university, enlisted as a private and worked his way up to captain, and was grievously wounded, spent months in a Yankee hospital, and was eventually, he was in prison pretty much until the close of the war. It's amazing to see how these men suffered on our behalf.
Gene, and I think Walter, you said something. Go ahead, Gene. I was going
to
tell you.
You going to get Walter to tell us about the chapel there on the campus at Ole Miss and the scene that's depicted in that stained glass window in the chapel there. Walter, if you would, please.
Yes, I thought you had brought that up, so I'm sorry. I apologize. Walter, please tell me. I forgot which one of you guys brought that up. So go ahead, Walter. That's very emotional. Tell about that stained glass, Walter.
That's quite all right, but the stained glass window is in the chapel on the university's campus, and it's dedicated as a memorial to the men of the university graves, those who lived and those who died. It's a beautiful piece of art, really, is what it's called, sort of like a stone mountain. I don't always necessarily see it as just what it represents, but what it is down to its finest details. It's true art. And it depicts one of the soldiers of the company at the beginning of the war, when they were dressed in an earlier war uniform, which was a gray jacket with black stripes sewn down the breast of the jacket, which looked sort of like a musician's jacket, if you're familiar with Civil War musician's jackets, but they had lots of extra braiding. And it depicts that soldier with a drawn saber in the Confederate flag. And I think most students at the University of Mississippi wouldn't know anything about it except to say that that's bad and that ought to be taken away and done away with as soon as possible, just to save the feelings of those whom they perceive to be their friends.
God Almighty. Go ahead, Gene.
Once again, a beautiful piece of Southern history, Southern culture, artwork, being destroyed to appease a bunch of criminals. And my question has always been, okay, if we take down something that's important of ours, what's the compromise? What are these people going to do? Are they going to stop robbing convenience stores? Are they going to stop attacking us on the street? Are they going to stop living off of our tax money? Are they going to ever take care of the litters of children that they turn out that we have to wind up paying for? What benefit is it from us throwing away our history? And I've never heard any of them give an answer except, well, we won't have violence. Well, that's not a compromise. That's what the mafia does. If you don't pay your money to Guido the leg breaker, they'll burn your shop down or bust your kneecaps or something like that. That's extortion. That's not a compromise. And we fold up and throw away a valuable, important piece of our heritage and our culture to appease basically a criminal element in society. And look at the results. They destroy neighborhoods. They destroy school systems. They destroy entire cities. And you talk about you can't go there. That's the bad part of town. Well, tell me what color that part of town is. That's the bad part of town. If you don't want to point that out. And we've thrown away so much of our history to appease people that have no respect for civilization, basically. That's it right there. They're uncivilized, and they never will be.
You know, Gene, you mentioned the people that took down the General Forrest statue here in Memphis a couple of years ago. You talking about sickening. Oh, that was the weirdest feeling I got. But, you know, they said, you know, probably the crime rate would drop and all that. But after they took the statue of General Nathan Bedford Forrest down, you know, I'd like to tell you people, I'll give you two guesses. Here recently, the FBI, the National Crime Lab, whatever, they came out with the most dangerous city in the United States, the murder capital of the United States, especially per capita. Guess what city that is, Walter?
What city would that be, sir?
That'd be Memphis, Tennessee.
I have heard that.
And they took that statue down, and I remember Gene said that it was that all these communists that took it down said it was supposed to be, that'd make it safer, didn't they, Gene?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that will create racial harmony, and everybody be walking up and down the streets of Memphis and holding hands and singing Kumbaya or something like that. And we all know that never happens. It's just it's a one-way street. We lose our history, we lose our culture, and it brings our civilization down as well, that we're taken down to the lowest level of society, and we join these thugs and criminals in the gutter. And we think, you know, well, we got along this time, and we compromised, and we'll get along. So it never works. It never does. The crime rate keeps getting worse and worse. The drugs, the illegitimate birth rate, everything that destroys a country and destroys a society, it just promotes it. And we have no help from any of the politicians. That's a pipe dream if there ever was one. You're talking about Tricky Nikki Haley in South Carolina. Well, we got Bill Slick Willie Lee, governor of Tennessee, that promised when he was running as a conservative Republican for governor, he would protect the Forrest bust in the Tennessee state capitol. We had a member of the Sons of Confederate Veterans at a fundraising dinner sat across the table from that and asked him that question point blank, and he said he would protect the Forrest bust. He wasn't in office 6 weeks, and he started doing everything that slimy weasel could do to get that bust out of the state capitol and hidden in someplace down in the state museum where nobody will see it. So, you know, what good does it do to elect these so-called conservative representatives, either in the House or the Senate or in your as your governor, when they're going to flat lie to your face? They don't care. So, it's pretty frustrating. So, Eddie, hope you have good luck down on the Ole Miss campus. Maybe you can turn a few people around down there.
I hope so. I certainly do. You know, another thing that's really emotional to me, I used to play under that statue of General Nathan Bedford Forrest when I was a kid. They had a wading pool there. I was, you know, second and third grade. We also had Confederate Park, Jefferson Davis Park, and now it's nothing. No, young people would never even know that's there. It's the saddest thing you've ever seen. Walter, if you will, we're almost out of time. Take us out. Tell us. I want to thank you so much and thank Gene for coming on tonight. And Walter, I'd like to thank you so much. And tell Paul Lawrence, by the way, I think Paul Lawrence has DC Republic. People, if you want to order any type of Confederate paraphernalia, Paul Lawrence is a great guy. He owns DC Republic. Walter, how can they order stuff in DC Republic and take us out with your last few comments with what little time we have left?
Sure. Well, thank you so much for having me. And as I understand it, things can be ordered online via their website at DixieRepublic.com. So if anybody's interested in any T-shirts or anything like that, they have a wide selection of merchandise, much of it pertaining exactly to what's going on in our times. But there's one thing that I thought of, and I'm certainly glad that America's 7-Eleven owners and operators could breathe after the terror that was General Forrest's memory was desecrated. You know, I worry about all those, you know, folks out there managing those stores. If you know, we didn't, we got to get rid of all these monuments because, you know, that'll be peace on earth right there. But people, take care of your history. Look after it. We are shepherds of history. When you see a dirty graveyard, clean it up, because it all matters. Every bit matters. And this is where this war will end, and we will stand in victory.
Yes, a southern statue or a Confederate statue, that's the root of all evil. Well, thank you again so much, Walter, for coming on. Maybe you can come on again sometime. And thank you, Mr. Bitter Ender, my brother. And God bless you, people. We'll see you hopefully same time, same place next week on the 2nd of April. Well, good night, everybody. And thank you, Cameron, for running the show. Thank you again, Walter. Thank you, Gene. Thank you, Blood River Radio, all of you. God bless all of you, every single one of y'all.